Okay, IPv6 is, who am I? I'm Dr. Bite. I'm a doctoral candidate working in security. Thank you, yeah. Virginia Tech. Yeah! All right. IPv6 is a complete overhaul of IPv4. The classic IPv4, which most people use right now, is running out of space. And because it comes down to the Goldilocks problem of class C being too small and class A being too big and class B being just right, and they try to aggregating like sticking together blocks of class C and then have the router route it together, classless interdomain routing. But that's only a temporary fix because our routing tables are getting smaller. Yeah. IPv5. Yes, actually, that's, I think, on the next page. Yeah, it's on the next page. Yes, there was. IPv5 was it's in use. It's a stream transport protocol made by the IETF, the Internet Engineering Task Force. That's what makes most of the protocols. But IPv5 is out there, so they called it IPv6. Actually, competing proposals were IPv7, 8, and 9, and so I don't know what the next one will be, but they had the routing tables were getting too big and too complex to try to route all these things because everybody wanted a Class B address. We have more than 256 machines. We want a Class B address. So we need the other thing. Why do we need a new version of the protocol? Is we need address renumbering. They decided, the IETF and some other people were figuring, that we needed address renumbering. Whenever we moved from one provider to another, we'd have to renumber all of our addresses, and nobody wanted to do that manually anymore. You know, in the original days, it was all set up, the routing tables was just manually entered into the computer in the Unix boxes. But the mobility of the computers, and the computers are switching from one to another. I mean, my Palm Pilot has an IPv4 stack. You know, everything is getting more and more connected to the internet, your dishwasher, you know, your microwaves on the internet. But they decided that they needed more and more stuff and to renumber the addresses. We needed to get real-time traffic because in order to get real-time traffic, say I wanted to get video on demand, I could just go and start watching Terminator 2 over the internet, and I want it not to lag every time. I mean, real audio and real video is bad enough. We needed some auto-configuration, meaning that we wanted to be able to take a computer out of the box, plug it in the wall, and have it automatically figure out where it is, who its neighbors are, where its routers are, the nearest router, etc. And, of course, why we're all here is they needed more security. Currently, right now, IPsec or IP security, which is about the last half of the talk here, is on IP security in general. They needed to add that in, so they put it as a mandatory feature. So what is it? As I said, it's a complete overhaul. They didn't just extend it. They completely redid the headers. They're working on TCP V6, et cetera. It started in 1992 through the IETF process. Other protocols were developed. Proposals were sent out. You know, the standard protocol development of IETF.org. They wanted to have a larger address space, obviously, because of this, because they wanted to be able to waste some space in order to make our routing tables easier. So they didn't. Right now, you've got to have everything just right on the classes, and they wanted to make sure the mobility. They've got mobile IP for V6. The different traffic classes, FTP, email, bulk versus, for example, like real-time video. They wanted to make sure security or at least authentication was part of everything available. But you wanted to make sure that IPv4, there wasn't a day in which, all right, at once, we're going to all convert over to IPv6. You can't have that. So we got to have some way to transition, and I'll talk about transitioning. Okay, addresses. No longer the 128.173.1.5. We now have, instead of 32-bit addresses, we're now going to 128-bit addresses. Ooh. 8 16-bit groups separated by colons. So that is a fully qualified internet address with, obviously made up, but that's how long these addresses are going to be.
It's in binary.
What's that, what?
In binary.
In binary? 1111111100. Okay. So they needed to have shortcuts, so they were able to, like, if you have a bunch of zeros, you could squish it and drop off some of the deleting zeros and have double colons and other such like that. But for the most part, people don't need to know where addresses are. I mean, unless you're doing promiscuous mode and want to find out who's doing what, but they wanted to put more emphasis on the domain name servers, which are also going to be changed because you can't have, and that'll be discussed later, you can't just have a record, a address resource record. Okay, so some hosts can have more than one interface. Before, it's like I have an IP address, there's my box. I have another IP address, here's my other box. Now, mobility can be, we can have a box connected to multiple providers. We can have a site that's connected to MCI and Sprint, so when Sprint goes down, MCI can take over without having to renumber stuff. We can add mobility, so if I move from Virginia out to here, it's automatically renumbered and I don't have to try to retype in the thing. In fact, even on campus, moving from one building to another, moving from one subnet to another requires a renumbering manually, going through and even rebooting the machine if it's Windows sometimes. Yeah. The boundaries are no longer fixed. We have what we call prefixes. So you see right there the 3FFE0900::, and then a bunch of zeros out, slash 24. And that means the first 24 bits, or 3FFE09, is the prefix, kind of like your subnet address. But that's, and I'll show a picture of how the routing will actually work. Since the addresses can be renumbered, everybody has a lifetime of addresses. There's an address, how long it's valid for, and how long it's preferred for, so that addresses can be renumbered if, for whatever reason. So about 136 years maximum, or infinity, and you can, and you renumber it, a preferred address time before the new one is sought. But they'll have different ones so that you'll know when to renumber. Now, you'll need to know that, they've been divided up into a couple of categories. So why did they choose 128 bits and not say 64 bits? Because right now it's 32. We just numbered. I mean, 2 to the 64 is an astronomical number. In fact, 2 to the 28, I think, is about 6.7 times 10 to the 23rd addresses per square meter of the Earth's surface. That's a lot. I mean, if you heard Bruce's talk yesterday, 2 to the 128 is, you know, almost uncountable. So why would we need 6.7 times 10 to the 23rd addresses per square meter? Because of routing inefficiencies. It's more effective to have the router wasting blocks of addresses in order to get our router tables easier and faster. So let me show you how they calculated 128 bits. Okay, so this is the only formula in the talk, but Dr. Christian Huitema, who is a highly respected member of the IETF and the IESG, the Internet Engineering Steering Group, developed this H number, and he said the log of the number of addresses over the number of bits is your percent efficiency. So if we have 10 bits in 1,024 hosts, about 0.30, if you take the log of 1024 and divide it by 10, this should be right. I want to make sure. So they've estimated it by looking at large networks in IPv4 right now, the way it is, that H is between 0.22 and 0.26. Well, if H is 0.22 to 0.26 and only 32 bits in IPv4, somewhere between 11 and 208 million hosts, if we had the perfect efficiency. Now, what they want to do is they want to connect everybody around the world to IP. They want to have a computer for every person on the planet. Soon we'll be at 10 billion people, you know, in each of those. Up to 100,000 computers if they wanted to have, you know, with their everything else on there, and who knows, for there's objects that aren't with people. So they calculated that out in somewhere between 57 and 68 bits. So instead of limiting themselves to 64 bits, they went to 128 bits. So in let me explain some new concepts to you. Unicast, we've seen, that's from one to one, uni being one, goes from one interface to another. It's a standard addressing that we use right now. Multicast, we've seen right now, that's one to multiple interfaces. This is a class D address in IPv4. There is no broadcast anymore in IPv6 when it comes around, but they developed Anycast. So if I'm sitting at my site in Kansas, I want to find out where the nearest machine is to a group of similar machines. So if I want to find where CNN is, CNN may have a site in Atlanta and London and Moscow, but my computer needs to know where the nearest one is. So what it does is it just searches out through the router table a ring at a time until it finds the nearest server. And you can it's a new feature in IPv6 called Anycast. So basically any machine within a certain group of machines will be found. Let's talk about some link local, site local, and global addresses, and then I'll actually show you in the next couple slides what an address, how it'll be broken up. So link local, all machines are on. If I just had an Ethernet segment and I wanted to have all the machines on there, that would be called link local machines. They're not connected to the Internet. They're kind of like your 10.0.0.0 machines for the Class A and other ones. You just set it out of the box and away it goes. They have site local, obviously global, but they have site local where you'd have different addresses for a group of machines that are just called site. Now, what's a site? Is it a single campus or is it a company that's spread out over the world and call it a site? So there's different addresses that are laid out. And the next slide, let me show you the different percentage of addresses. And you can see the inefficiency and for future expansion. Because right now, the way they've allocated it, global unicast, which is from 1-to-1 through the global, is 1/8 of the address space. That's it. And that's the biggest, one of the biggest chunks. The other biggest chunk is geographic-based unicast, which is based off of GPS or any other kind of address that's based on where the machine is. They got things in here for IPX, multicast addresses, link local, which is what I said on a particular link, site local, and others. That accounts for about 30% of the address space. And that includes every single global unicast. So another 70% of addresses is not assigned. So theoretically, you could branch this off into space at some point and maybe have IP on other planets or the moon and stuff like that, and they'll still work. IPv, yeah, out there. So let me show you what a different... The global unicast address is kind of like the common one, which is what most people use. And I took 128 bits and divided it up into... There's the 3-bit, well, I didn't, but the IETF divided into format prefix, which is the those 3 bits on the left down there, which kind of tells whether it's a global-based machine or a IPX or something like that. You got TLAs, NLAs, SLAs, and the interface ID. Now, the TLA is kind of like the overall global providers, while the NLA is for particular sites. So, like, a TLA would be something like Sprint. And an NLA aggregator, that's the top level aggregator, next level aggregator, and site level aggregator. The next level aggregator could be a university. And then each university can, instead of giving out little subnets of 256 or 1,024 bits each university is given a fixed format prefix, a fixed TLA, and a fixed NLA, so that each university can give out SLAs any way they want to. Well, that's 16 bits right in there that they can give out per network, so up to 65,000 networks per every site. Now, the interface ID is you take the Ethernet card and you run through some IEEE shifting around. You basically take your MAC address, split it apart, put some stuff, put a couple bits in the middle, FFFE and zeros in there, and flip a couple bits, and you'll come up with your interface address. So that's how the your addresses are calculated, basically off of your MAC address, since most people now have Ethernet. But if not, there's other ways of getting the 64-bit. So the 64 bits just for a machine, much less in the site and all that. Let me show you now the header. Our old IP header is gone. They still have the version number where it's supposed to be, but now they've got some different things in there. We have flows and priorities and class. Priority used to be class and flow label. That's like saying every frame of Terminator 2 will have a unique flow label. So you can know like what frame is coming through, and you'll know that this is a Terminator 2 film that's going to this address, needs real-time video, so that the routers can go through there, see the header, figure out that it's real-time traffic, not even have to look at the whole packet and send it on. So just with a few bits, and everything is fixed. You notice that there's no IP options anymore. And I'll cover how those are covered, but there's no IP options. It's a way that they just stick it all in there. Payload length, you can have up to 64K in a packet. However, there's ways of getting more in there. Next header is kind of like in IP, it says, here the next header is TCP. Hop limit is not time to live, because people, hop limit is you decrement one every time you go through a router, because you used to have time to live, and no longer are routers one, you know, every router takes less than a second. No router takes 3 seconds. Because TTL used to be the number of seconds that it was at a router. And there's your source and destination bits. But let me show you in, yep, there you go. Payload length is 16 bits, but if you put the length to zero, you can have something called a jumbogram. 4 gigabyte packets. Oh, yeah. Now, because over fiber, and where it's going toward that, it makes more efficiency to send larger packets. So they allow for jumbograms. The minimum MTU is 1280 bytes. And but they haven't really addressed this, but I'm not really sure what a ping of death would be with a jumbogram of 4 gig. That would be something. I don't know whether it's just like, you know, well, it's coming, and they, you know, that's the kind of vision they see, but you know, from a security point of view, I'm kind of wondering, well, it's legal to send a 4 gig packet, but that's a serious mail bomb or a packet bomb. Yeah, don't drop those packets. And type of header, there's different, instead of using options, they've got headers for authentication and ESP and stuff like that, fragment and destination, so that every packet doesn't have to be looked at until the end. They can just, if they want a hop by hop header, they could, but for instance, using a fixed size header without the options and no fragmentation, if you need fragmentation, you stick a fragment header. There's no fragmentation. You allow it, but for the most part, they won't have it. So you don't have to look at the fragmentation. So the routers will be at least 40% faster with just a fixed-size header in experiments that have been done. Header chaining, you've seen this. You know, you stick an IPv4 and then a TCP, and away you go. IPv6 will stick, next header is routing. The router header will say it's TCP, or the next header is routing, which will then say it's a fragment. The next thing is a fragment will say authentication. Next thing is an ESP, and it you just chain the headers straight on down. This is ripped out of RFC 1883. Let me show you about routing. In routing, you have, if I'm at router X, we have variable length subnet masks. So now, you know, it's your classes are A, B, and C, and everything is kind of laid out. Your routers are laid out with, they find the longest prefix. So remember that slash 24, what that means? That means that the first 24 bits of the 128 bits is your prefix header. So it's going to say prefix 1 and router 1, router 2, router 3, and router 4. Here's two examples on the bottom. If I have an IPv6 address, 3FFE900.1.1.11.269, whatever else, what happens is, you can see with the bold, is it will take the router will say, well, here, let me show you over here.